Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, I've got an interesting wine. Mm-hmm. I wait for this wine every year. It has nothing to do with the movies.
Oh.
There's nothing to guess. There's nothing about cinema. It's the Beaujolais Nouveau. Every year, Beaujolais Nouveau comes out in November. And these grapes were just harvested in early September. These were just on the vine like 6-7 weeks ago.
Huh.
So it's brand new, fresh. It's a very light wine. You're supposed to drink it with like appetizers or light food. And the French do this because, you know what? They don't have Thanksgiving. There's nothing to celebrate in France in November. It's gray. It's dreary. So you know what? Let's have a nice, fun party wine.
Oh.
And I love Beaujolais, regular Beaujolais, but they get the Nouveau out every November, and I always line up to get a couple bottles.
That's quite tasty.
And you are here to share this with me this year.
I am. Well, it's a Nouveau year.
And you can tell it tastes different. It doesn't taste like your normal wine that's been in a bottle for a year. This has been in a bottle for like 3 weeks.
But it's good. I think, you know, all things considered, for a 3-week-old bottle of wine, it does the trick.
Well, even though the wine is only like 3 weeks old, we have brand new movies, mm-hmm. and we are going to talk about, get this, folks, 8 movies. But Hannah made me promise, and I agreed, we're gonna move through it.
Yes.
Like, they're going to move. Yes, 8 sounds like a lot, and it is. But I only saw 5 of them. Hannah saw 7 of them.
Yeah.
But so they're going to move. It's going to click.
Yes.
We'll be all right. So obviously we're going to start off with the elephant in the room, the blockbuster. Normally I would say Marvel movie here, but it's not. It's not a Marvel movie. It's Warner Brothers.
DC Comics,
Justice League. We've had a Batman, Superman set up to this. We had Man of Steel. We had Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. We had Wonder Woman earlier this year. Now they're bringing them all together. They teased us a lot in Justice League. You kind of saw the characters a little bit in Wonder Woman. And here they are all together. Half this movie's introductions. Half is fighting the villain. It's only got like 37% on the tomato meter. I wouldn't go that low.
No.
I wasn't turned off by it. I'm not cold on it, but I'm certainly not warm on it, Hannah.
No, but I mean, 37% is ridiculous because it's 100% of the fans who are going to see this movie no matter what. And I always say, I put these in 3 camps. You have your camp of people who have been looking forward to this movie, who are going to see it no matter what the tomato meter says, no matter what the critics say. You've got, and they see all of them immediately. Then you've got the second group of people who have seen a lot of them or get around to seeing most, if not all of them, eventually. And then you have the people who couldn't care less. And those you just immediately go, don't even worry about it. You know, this isn't for you. I felt the first hour I was worried because I thought the first hour was a mess with all the exposition and having to set up all these characters. But once the action kind of kicked in and you got that interaction with the team, then I liked it so much better. So I didn't love it. I don't think it's nearly as good as Wonder Woman. It's not nearly as fun as Thor. But it's better and more digestible. It's not as dark and brooding as like Batman versus Superman was.
Well, it's got a couple things already going against it. It's right on the heels of Thor Ragnarok, which is still, it's only like its 3rd weekend in the theaters. It's still raking in like $50 million a week. So they're going to fight each other for money this weekend. And Wonder Woman was in the spring, early summer, not that long ago. It's already out on DVD, but people still remember that was a really, you know, everyone liked it more than I did, but they said it was a really good movie. And there are ardent DC comic defenders who like that this world is darker and more moody and more foreboding than the Avengers universe, which is lighter, funnier, quirkier, cheekier. And granted, I am now more of a Marvel fan. I kind of just like those characters more. Mm-hmm. Maybe I like their story arcs a little more. But, you know, there is room for an auto-tuned, growl-brooding Batman. But So let's talk about my biggest pet peeve with this film is the plot device, the story arc. I'm intrigued by the villain. Okay, I liked him. He's completely computer-generated. There's no actor in there.
Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf. I've never heard of him before.
Me either.
And he has no backstory. We don't know why he wants to take over Earth or why he's so mad. But he's voiced by Kieran Hines. All right, that's cool. I like him. But he's after mother boxes. Now, talking about the dumbest plot device. So the heroes, our heroes have to protect the mother boxes, and Steppenwolf has to chase the mother boxes. And the mother boxes are whatever you want them to be. They're perpetual energy. They're true power. They unite into the unity. They create. They destroy while they create. That means nothing. It's garbled. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I hated the mother boxes.
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on with the mother boxes, and that's one of those things you just kind of discount. And you go, I don't really care what the plot line is here. It's really about, it's about the coming together. It picks up where Dawn of Justice left off. Superman is dead. It's a world without Superman. The symbol of hope is gone. Batman is in a funk. But then this evil dude, alien, shows up, and suddenly Batman realizes he needs to try and recapture some of that hope and spirit that Superman had embodied, and he can't do it alone, which is very, you know, that's huge for this loner bat guy to realize that he can't save the world alone. And he goes off to recruit some additional superheroes, including, you know, Gal Gadot returns as Wonder Woman, and you've got, you see Henry Cavill's Superman in flashback and some other things. And then you've got these new guys. You've got a cyborg, half man, half machine guy that's introduced. And then you've got Aquaman, who can talk to the water and the fish. And then you have, who's the other one?
The Flash.
The Flash, who, Ezra Miller playing the Flash. And he was a very entertaining character, but he reminded me a lot of the same way they played Spider-Man. The young Spider-Man in the latest Avengers movies, that he's this enthusiastic kid who's eager to fight crime and join this superhero team.
So they make the Flash very twitchy. He's like this really quirky, computery millennial. And I just spent the whole time comparing him to Quicksilver from the X-Men. You remember Quicksilver from Days of Future Past, and how much better they just did with Quicksilver in those stop-motion scenes when he's running really fast. Here, they kind of do that, but there's always, you know, the lightning storm and everything. That just didn't grab me. Cyborg and Aquaman really have nothing going for them. Cyborg even has more going for them than Aquaman. Aquaman has nothing going on. He doesn't even have a mini-story. The
I'm
other
not
two,
even, right.
Like, the Flash has his father in jail. Cyborg's got his whole just mess. He's a mess.
Yeah, his father
but Aquaman's got nothing. This is Khal Drogo, by the way. He from Game of Thrones. So it's Jason Momoa is the actor. But he was Khal Drogo in Game of Thrones. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
And you touched on my favorite part of the film was Superman is dead. And Earth is in a funk, man. People are depressed. There's this montage of skinheads knocking off Muslim bodegas. And Batman says, I can't even read the news anymore. Everything stinks. And it's like, wow, he's kind of mirroring today. Like a lot of people don't read the news anymore just because everything stinks. So it's kind of getting the vibe. And I was wondering, did you notice, I wonder if this feels so uneven because of the post-production disruption. Zack Snyder, who made Man of Steel, who made Batman v Superman, and made this, he filmed the whole thing, he had to step away from post-production after his daughter died. And Joss Whedon stepped in, the Avengers guy, and he took over post-production duties. I wonder if that is the reason maybe this feels a little uneven.
It's both a positive and a negative. The negative is that it feels uneven. The positive is I think that Joss Whedon probably just managed to make the most of the lighter moments in a way that made it feel slightly skewing more towards an Avengers type of movie. And so I liked that part of it. But yeah, so it was a double-edged sword where you had this unevenness. But if it had been strictly a Zack Snyder movie, I'm not sure I would have liked it as much as I ultimately did, which isn't tremendously liked. But I consider it one of those solid B, middle-of-the-road superhero movies.
It's middle of the road. And Zack Snyder's favorite film of mine is still his first film, 300. Sparta. But
there's a lot to be said for 300 and for going and looking at that again. You don't even have to turn the sound on.
Okay. I see where we're going.
Okay.
All right, moving on. Our next film is My favorite film of the week, in fact, so far, it's my favorite film of the entire year. And we're talking about Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And we saw this together early Sunday morning at Middleburg Film Festival, which it did not win the audience award, which shocks the crap out of me. We'll get to that movie later, which actually won that award. But this is a woman in grief, a grief-stricken woman who says, you know what, I'm not going to take it anymore. And she radicalizes herself. She puts on her Rambo outfit, and she is going to call attention to the fact that her daughter was raped and set on fire and murdered. And she says, hey, it's been 7 months. You haven't arrested anyone. You haven't caught the murderer. So she purchases advertising on three billboards near her home, asking, hey, where's all the action? And she calls out the chief of police, Chief Willoughby. What's going on? And Chief Willoughby, played by Woody Harrelson, actually kind of sort of the heart and soul of the film, yes, is Chief Willoughby. Mm-hmm. He kind of sees the bigger picture, but he understands where she's coming from. He's like, you know what? Not all murders do get solved, and the ones that do sometimes are just dumb luck. So that's the back and forth between the two main characters. But out of nowhere, perhaps the film's most interesting character is Officer Dixon, played by Sam Rockwell, who is this racist, homophobic, inept cop who you would steer clear from just because he is bad news.
Still lives with Mama, who's got some problems of her own.
And he has the most well-written character arc I've seen in a film in so long. He takes a personal journey, and the audience is so invested. Our audience cheered when he did something later on in the film. It kind of marked a transition in his character. He does something, and the audience just cheered. I guarantee you, in regular films, or if you watch this at home, you won't really pick up what happened. It was just a special screening we were in, and this entire movie from start to finish just nailed me to the floor. I was in it. I was involved. I shuddered. I cheered. I can't stop thinking about Three Billboards.
Yeah, it's in my top five, at least. I'm not sure how it'll all flesh out in the end, but I love this movie, too, and because you ran every emotion throughout this 2 hours, you were horrified, you were compassionate, you were empathetic, you were sympathetic, you were just terrified, you were appalled, you were shocked. And that's a testament to a couple of things. I mean, the writing, the directing, the acting across the board. I mean, Frances McDormand as this grieving mother. This is the most whacked out revenge movie you will ever see. And it is a dark, dark comedy. And so you're laughing uncomfortably.
You laugh as much as you shudder, yes, at the horror. And probably for good, because otherwise it would be too dark.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't work if it didn't have that comedy injected in it. But yes, it was hugely surprising, and I do think that the standout performers in this one are Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell. I mean, I just think that their particular roles are just so just fascinating to watch, and their story arcs are really impressive. Frances McDormand's always good, you know. She's
and she initially said no, she did not want to do this, because in real life she's 60, 61 years old, and that means she would have had her first kid at 38 in this film, which she rightly said, in rural South, Missouri, you do not have your first child at 38. So she wanted to be true to the character. But now that you've seen her, could you imagine anyone else doing it?
No, and that's a testament to, you know, to the writers and the envisioning her in this role and her accepting it and taking it on. And it's just an incredibly well-cast movie. And yeah, from beginning to end, it was probably my favorite coming out of Middleburg in terms of just, you know, overall.
Yeah, it certainly was my favorite. But it was written and directed by Martin McDonagh. He did 2008's In Bruges, which everybody who finally comes across it loves. It's becoming this cult classic. And 2012's lesser seen Seven Psychopaths, but still a very good film. And, you know, at the beginning, you can see how this deliberately kind of manipulates you. You're all on Frances McDormand's side, Mildred's side. I support you, girl. You go get them. And by the end, as her actions kind of become more indefensible, you realize maybe there aren't sides I should be choosing from. Maybe we're all in this together. I saw Artie Chick's one drawback, and I see where she's coming from. She says Peter Dinklage, who's in this movie, another Game of Thrones guy, is underused, and I guess he is, but you know, if it was a normal guy who wasn't Peter Dinklage, would you say the same thing?
Well, but so is Lucas Hedges, who
he doesn't
really
get too much play either.
He plays the, you know, Frances McDormand's character's son, who is still alive and having to deal with his mother being obsessed with solving the murder of her daughter, and it's this kid's sister, and you know his. So there's a little bit of a short shrift given, I think, to his character as well. But again, you got to keep it. You know, there was only so much you could do.
It
wasn't their movie, and this movie really is the arc of those three main characters being the mom, the police chief, and the deputy, who's just. He's got some major problems.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a strong vote in for Sam Rockwell, I think, for supporting actor this year.
But here's my problem.
He's so strong.
He's so strong, but so is Woody Harrelson. And I hope I would independently nominate them both for supporting actor. And so I hope they don't somehow end up canceling each other out.
All right, yeah, put this on. It's opening in a couple cities every week. It's not nationwide yet. So do not forget about Three Billboards. Put this on your map. You're gonna wanna see this. Our next movie, I did not see, Hannah saw it, and it's a pretty big film this week, Wonder, and it's from a guy I like, Stephen Chbosky. He did Perks of Being a Wallflower. I loved that movie. In fact, it made my top 10 list when it came out like 4 or 5 years ago. I loved that movie so much. Did you see Perks of Being a Wallflower? Does Wonder match or even exceed it?
I think it exceeds it for the larger audience. But I think his touch, you know, is one of the reasons that it's going to be or should be successful. You said I didn't write much in terms of a review on my site about it. And I was like, there's really not much to say. I mean, this movie is based on a New York Times bestseller that a lot of people, more than I had realized, have actually read. Mm. A lot of kids, it was sort of one of those young adult kids books, but adults read it too. And it's just about this kid, Augie Pullman, 10 years old, who was born with these severe facial deformities. And when he hits fifth grade, he's been homeschooled for his entire life. And at fifth grade, his parents decide, you know what, it's time to put him into a mainstream school. And so he joins middle school, kind of like a prep school in New York. And it's about, you know, his just sort of having to deal with bullies, but making friends. And this is just one of those movies. You talk about getting the feels. I had the feels from like the first frame. This is one of those movies where you have to take your Kleenex out and you never put it away. And it's another one that's really well cast. You have
Who plays Augie, by the way?
So Augie is played by Jacob Tremblay.
Where do we know that name from?
I love Jacob Tremblay. So I loved him in Room.
Room.
So Room last year, this was the kid who just kind of burst on the scene.
God, was that only last year?
I think it was last year, wasn't it?
With Brie, yeah.
With Brie Larson, and maybe it was 2 years ago. But he was...
It was 2 years ago, because Emma Stone won last year.
Yeah, because he impressed me so much in that movie, and I remember thinking, wow, this is a kid to watch. And then this year he was in a very and not so well-received movie called The Book of Henry that only Christian Amaker and I seem to like.
Yeah, you're the minority on that one.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't great, it took a turn that was weird, but it was still, you know, his performance was still very good in that. And then, so in this one, you have Julia Roberts playing his mom. Mm. You have Owen Wilson playing his dad, who some people are not big Owen Wilson fans, but he does this movie, it's a great role for him. And it's just a great family film for the holiday season.
You don't see Julia Roberts a lot anymore. How's she doing?
She's doing good. And, you know, I think she's being very selective. And I think she read this role and decided, absolutely, she read this book. And as a mom herself, was very moved by it. And, you know, anybody who's seen already the trailers and to know how good Jacob Tremblay is as an actor and to know that... this is just one of those movies that you really, truly can take the family to. Mandy Patinkin plays the school principal, Mr. Tushman.
Tushman.
And he's one of these incredibly compassionate principals who, you know, but with the zero tolerance policy of bullies. But everybody in this film, in the story, you learn, you basically get Augie's story from the perspectives of different people at different times, from his sister Via and the sister's friend gets her own chapter. And it's just a really well put together film that just kind of, it just carries you from beginning to end and is going to absolutely leave everybody who watches any kind of Hallmark movie, Lifetime movie, in just a puddle.
Well, it sounds like whatever slice of the audience is not interested or doesn't go to Justice League this week will be across the hallway at Wonder.
They should. I mean,
it's good counter-programming.
It is absolutely counter-programming. This is your family film. This is the one that the adults are going to like, the kids. The messaging is so good. It's just, it's not like dark. The kid is so likable. It's like there's no way you can not like Augie. And to just sort of watch him kind of make his way in the world and have this incredibly supportive family behind him, it's just one of those ones that you just go, wow, that was just so good.
Well, our next film is the one that actually won the audience award at the Middleburg Film Festival. It was at Sundance earlier this year, where it got snapped up by Netflix. And you can go right now, turn on your streaming television, call up Netflix, and type in Mudbound. You can go watch Mudbound right now after you listen to this review. In fact, I'm going to pigeonhole it, and it's not fair to Mudbound. But every year, there's one to two hard-to-watch films, but you need to because it'll make you a better person, and it's actually really good films. Think 2-3 years ago, 12 Years a Slave. The film you're going to watch that one time, which is amazing, but you know you're never going to watch again because it's just too hard. And last year, it was kind of that way with Birth of a Nation. Mm-hmm. This year, I'm going to go ahead and, it's not fair, but I'm going to pigeonhole Mudbound in that genre. It's not as ancient to those films. In fact, this is only in the 1940s. In Mississippi, it's about two families, one white, one black, how they kind of interact with each other and how one just gets easier judgment and fairness and justice because they are Caucasian, while the other family, who actually has lived and worked that land since they were slaves on it, will never actually own that land because of who they are and the color of their skin. There's a World War II vibe in it. One white son, one black son, each come home from World War II with their, whatever they called PTSD back in older wars. They didn't have that term yet. And they identify with one another, and they start hanging out, and the community sees that, and they know trouble's a-brewing. You just can't do that in the 1940s Mississippi. I really liked Mudbound. I think you might have had the pleasure, the advantage of seeing a Q&A with Dee Reese.
Yeah, I didn't realize you hadn't been there for that one. But
I saw this later on.
So when I saw Mudbound at Middleburg, there were a couple of things that made it, which is why it won the audience award. It's because you had
She helped it.
She helped it tremendously because, one, you had, she was winning, and Dee Reese, the director, was winning another award at the time based on being like an innovator.
This is her only second feature film, by the way.
Yeah, and her first one, she credits Netflix with helping people rediscover the first one. Mm. And so that's why she had no qualms with this idea of it being released simultaneously on Netflix and in theaters. But Dee Reese, she was sharp. I mean, my goodness, I had never seen or heard her before. And her Q&A after the screening was just really engaging, and you just wanted, it made you root for her, and it made you root for the other women that she put on her team for this film. And it definitely is, she could be in there as a best director nominee.
It's a very well made film.
And this film, even though it's basically showing up on Netflix as it comes out, could very well make it into the Best Picture category. I totally agree with you. To me, it was. I hate pigeonholing it too, but it was. It's not fair, but that it's that epic period piece that it's like you got to get the one in there. And
because I don't want to watch it again, Anna.
I have no interest in watching it again. But it stayed with me enough.
I'll never forget it.
This is another one benefits from an incredible ensemble cast. Mary J. Blige.
That's the one I was going to bring up. Mary J. Blige. Every now and then it happens. The last time I remember it happening was Monique. in Precious when she won the Oscar for that coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Mary J. Blige, she's never really acted in a big film before. And bad enough, I didn't know it was her.
I didn't know it was her until the credit
roll.
Yeah. So that was phenomenal. I mean, it's got Carey Mulligan.
With a southern accent, by the way. I don't like seeing Carey Mulligan with a southern accent.
The equivalent, she's the matriarch of the white family, and then Mary J. Blige is sort of the matriarch of the black family on this farmland. This movie took you a lot of different places, too, but it was never as, where I would never want to watch 12 Years a Slave again, and I really... or Birth of a Nation, this one was still not nearly as brutal a watch. And so I think it's important that people realize
it is not. It's nowhere near as brutal as 12 Years a Slave, which is one of the most brutal movies I've ever seen in my life.
But so while we put it in that same bucket in terms of it being this epic period piece about race relations, it's actually very, there are some very timely themes still that resonate. And I think that it's definitely one of those ones that if you want to be in the know, come award season, you're going to have to watch it. Just watch it once. And
you can do it easy. You can do it on your television right now. And I like the voiceover from multiple point of views. Everyone kind of gets their voiceover and explaining where they're coming from. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. And some people, actually, one of the things that Dee Reese mentioned when there was a question about how it felt a little disjointed at times, she said that was her intention, that she basically, it's like you see the one that they were sort of shot parallel with the black family story being told and the white family story being told, and then there's a certain point at which they intersect and they cross, but they were purposely adapted from this book in a way that was intentional to kind of tell these parallel stories and then have it come together. So again, hearing that Q&A, it also influenced how people felt about the film coming out, and therefore I was not at all surprised that it scored the audience award.
A note to writers and directors out there, Q&A's always help.
They do.
Like, you can have, like, Three Billboards didn't have a Q&A, and I honestly don't know if it would have made it any better if it did, but Q&A's just help.
They especially help when you're good at them. And Dee Reese was really good.
That's true. I've seen great examples, and I've seen not so good. There was one at, I won't name it, but there was one at Middlebury. It was like, why are you even here?
Right, right. And so in this particular case, it absolutely works in the film's favor.
All right, our next film, once again, I purposely skipped because I just didn't want to ruin my Saturday morning. But you got up early, and you trudged to the theater to see the latest animated film, and it's about the New Testament, I suppose. Tell us about The Star.
Send the Jew to the one about the first Christmas.
But
and you
it's
stay
from
home.
It's from a very interesting point of view. It's not from Mary or Joseph or the three wise men point of view. Who are we looking through?
We're sort of looking through the eyes of the barnyard animals.
That makes sense.
Barnyard animals. Donkey. But let's just say it is probably one of the most sanitized versions of the story that you could ever expect to see. It begins in Nazareth. 9 months B.C.
9 months B.C.
Can you imagine what happens 9 months B.C.? Suddenly,
oh, podcast.
Suddenly, there's some angel who comes down and sees Mary, and of course, there's some like little barnyard rat or something who overhears this entire exchange and knows that by some miracle, Immaculate Conception, suddenly Mary is pregnant with the Son of God.
Way to go.
And she's just about to marry Joseph.
No, convenient.
And so she shows up at the wedding, basically very pregnant. And Joseph's like, ooh, okay, we'll raise the Son of God. Well, I mean, I'm like, really? Dude?
Why not? Let's do it.
You're buying that?
Let's do it. Let's go.
And then this donkey kind of comes on the scene, a miniature donkey. And so we kind of start, the story is really then following Mary and Joseph's story through the donkey's eyes, who is sort of accompanying them as they go from Nazareth to Bethlehem to participate in a census. And the whole movie is them basically trudging through, getting to Bethlehem, and of course her being very pregnant. And then guess what? They get to Bethlehem. There's no room at the inn.
No.
And they end up in another barn.
No kidding.
And then there's a manger scene, and all ends happily ever after, even though some evil people had been following Mary and basically did not want her to deliver this baby. It's a total faith-based, it is absolutely strictly a faith-based movie for kids. That's what it is. It's not, the kids enjoyed it well enough. They seemed to be okay with it. The adults were all on their phones, and nobody complained that the adults were on their phones the whole time, because I didn't take my phone out, but I was really jealous of the guy next to me, and I was not going to tell him to put his phone away, because it was one of those things where you just, all right, the kids are happy, they're doing their thing, they're watching this movie.
I hate films in theaters. I noticed that the director, his name's Timothy Reckert, he was the lead animator on Anomalisa, possibly the furthest film you could get away from the star. Both animated, differently animated. That was more stop motion, claymation almost. But Anomalisa, you know, subject matter wise, it's pretty far away from the star. Yeah, I watched the preview before, because I was thinking every animated film that comes out, I think, oh, well, I take The Boy. And I saw this preview, was like, nope, staying home.
You always give me this BS about, I don't watch previews, I don't read synopses. And then all of a sudden I go, why weren't you there? I saw the preview.
Yeah, it's an animated film, so I'll watch it to see if the kid can go.
It should have been you. That's all I can say.
That sounds like a good movie. It was
three press people at the screening and a bunch of church groups. And so I would say this is a very serviceable film to just show in place of Sunday school one day, and for kids to watch on the VHS tape. VHS. There wouldn't be a VHS anymore. On whatever DVD or stream it, if you want little kids to get a dose of a faith-based movie that works for them. And it's got a new Mariah Carey Christmas song in it. So there you have it.
Well, in the vein of It Should Have Been You, I took one for the team on the next one, because It Should Have Been Me.
True that.
It's in French.
It's all you.
It's called Beats Per Minute, BPM is what it goes by. And it's France's submission into the Oscar race this year for Best Foreign Film. The guy who directed it, Robin Campillo, he wrote The Class back in 2008, which was nominated for an Oscar that year. So he's already got some Oscar cred under his belt. But I have a feeling Beats Per Minute will not be nominated. But once again, everybody likes this a little bit more than me. But
I don't think
enough people agree with me that it's overly long and it falls off a cliff at the end. This takes place in the early 90s. You're not really sure when. Now, 2 years ago, did you see the documentary How to Survive a Plague? That was about HIV activists in the 80s protesting the Reagan administration and the National Institutes of Health down the road right here saying, where's our cure? Why are you not taking this seriously? People are dying. And this is just about that, but in Paris, they spawn their own ACT UP groups where they invade pharmaceutical companies and throw blood, fake blood all over the wall, and they protest conferences where scientists are speaking out, because they're calling attention. It's like, hey, the gay community has been adversely impacted by the HIV virus, as have prisoners and prostitutes, and you're not doing your best to find a cure, as if heterosexual couples had this problem. And they're raising their voices. Okay, that's interesting. And we see a lot of their debates and their community, their weekly meetings, and there's a couple characters we latch onto, but man, I just wasn't feeling this film. Skip it.
Yeah, well, and I had talked to a group at Baltimore's Sunday Cinema Sunday group last week, and this had been the movie that they saw previous.
Really?
So last week they saw Lady Bird. The week before they saw Beats Per Minute, and all I heard as I got ready to talk about Lady Bird was how they hated the previous week's movie. So many people just did not like it, and so it did not resonate with them. I read the synopsis. I watched the little trailer clip thing, and I went, no, thank you. So just like you probably, you were fortunate to miss The Star, I was fortunate to miss Beats Per Minute, and I don't think I'll be rushing out to go catch that one.
You know, people who go to those weekly screenings on Sunday morning, they're old. They're older, they're retired. I can't believe they showed Beats Per Minute.
I know.
It is so graphic.
I can't
believe they showed that to that audience. Lady Bird, right up their alley.
Yeah.
Lucky, right up their alley. Don't show them Beats Per Minute.
Yeah, and that's what I heard.
What a stupid choice.
So incredibly graphic that it put them off.
I can't believe they did that.
Yeah.
Our next one's a documentary. It's called Bill Nye, Science Guy. Everyone from my childhood. remembers Bill Nye the Science Guy, who made, he was quirky and he made science fun. Well, now that he's older, he wants to, he never had children, so he wants to leave the world better than he found it. So he's fighting creationists, he's fighting Ken Ham, the guy who did the Bible Museum and the Ark Museum, and he's fighting Joe Bastardi, Fox News' global warming denier, and he's fighting all of those to say science works, believe in science, don't believe in Fox News. What did you think about Bill Nye Science Guy?
I liked the first half hour. I was totally into it. You know, you realize that this guy won 18 Emmys in 5 years. It was after my generation, so I never did watch the show. But it's got comments from people like Neil deGrasse Tyson who say, Bill Nye was the science teacher that everyone wishes they had in high school.
That's true.
And I could totally see that. His mission was to make science fun for kids and for kids to want to love science. And I think he made a huge impact there. Then the movie shifts into this new realm where it starts exposing Bill Nye's vulnerabilities and his personal challenges. And he became kind of less likable.
I did not mind that because this is not hero worship. This is, look, celebrities are people too.
But it started. It starts as hero worship. So it opens with this notion of hero worship. And then you've got, you have people kind of bringing him down a peg about how fame kind of changed him.
He's kind of a fame whore.
Yeah. And so that kind of bothered me. But so narratively, though, I think it totally lost its way. So I was into it for the first half hour. And then I just more and more, they kept hitting the same beats over and over again. And I lost interest. So while kudos to Bill Nye for the impact, he will have a legacy on a lot of the 90s generation kids who learned to appreciate science, and he puts up the good fight. This is sort of another Preaching to the Choir documentary in the same vein as An Inconvenient Truth and sequel.
But I know who that documentary is for. I have no idea who the audience is for Bill Nye Science Guy. It's not even for people interested in science or who like NASA or who like space. It's, who the hell is this for? Yeah,
exactly. That's pretty much what it boiled down to for me too, is that it reminded me, oh yeah, I forgot about him and what happened to Bill Nye, and oh yeah, he really was kind of a cool, he had a cool job in the 90s, and he is out there fighting this fight.
Well, he's fighting a fight that needs to be fought, and I'm glad someone's out there doing it.
Yeah, it's true. This movie, it has a very, very, very limited appeal for, especially right now. There's just way too much out there that people need to see and should see and should want to see to even begin to figure out where this would fall into the mix.
Yeah, this is going to get lost.
Yeah, totally lost. Deservedly so.
All right, our final film I didn't see and no one is going to see.
No,
it's called, I don't even know if it's getting released into theaters.
Walking Out. I think a very few theaters. It's in a few random
theaters.
It's kind of the
something I would watch. I can't believe you did this.
I know, and I wanted you to watch it. I shared the link. Come on, dude. Because this is a dude flick. So you have your chick flicks.
Don't pigeonhole
me.
This
is a dude flick. It's a father-son survival out in the wilderness, big sky country kind of movie. But here's why I latched onto it. It stars, this kid, Josh Wiggins, but it's also got Matt Bomer, who people will know from...
I know that name. He was a male stripper.
Magic Mike. And White Collar on USA. Like, so
no one saw that.
Oh, but White Collar is so, you know, people know him.
No, people know Magic Mike.
No, they know Matt Bomer. And Matt Bomer is, this is a real departure for him. He plays like this loner, rugged guy out in Montana whose teenager visits once a year from Texas, and they struggle to bond once a year out in big sky country, and they go hunting, and so they are trying to connect, and it's just how they have a really hard time connecting because the dad, Matt Bomer's character, really doesn't he lives off the grid. Whereas the kid, you know, having to leave his smartphone behind when they go out hunting. First of all, you know, their danger looms whenever there's no communication device taken when you go out in the middle of nowhere by yourselves. But a tragedy happens while this father and son are out in the wilderness trying to hunt big game and to bond. And so it's all about then what defines manhood and this kid sort of having to step up. And it's just, it's directed by these twin brothers, Alex and Andrew Smith, who hail from Montana. And so, yeah, I mean, it's minimal characters, minimal dialogue, minimal plot. Very minimalist.
It didn't sound like you,
but
Hannah.
It's beautiful. But Montana, but big country, like just for the scenery is pretty gorgeous. But yeah, this is one that unless you are maybe a member of the Matt Bomer fan club and you've heard about it through some other channels, but yeah, I've seen nothing about this movie, but I did watch it, and it's bleak. It's kind of a downer. So if you want to stare at a very rugged looking Matt Bomer for an hour and a half, then you might want to seek this out on rental someday.
Well, folks, that is 8 films. We've been busy, but since next week is Thanksgiving and we're going to go our separate ways, we're going to take next week off, but Hannah did want to plug, there are still movies coming out next week. Probably the biggest one I've already seen and you have not seen is the new Pixar, Coco. Mm-hmm. And I believe there's Roman J. Israel Esquire starring Denzel.
There's The Breadwinner, which is another. So while Coco will get most of the animated crowd, there's this Angela Jolie executive produced animated film called The Breadwinner that's about a girl raised in Afghanistan and having to deal with the Taliban. And then the other one that I have seen that you have not yet that I highly recommend that you see is called The Man Who Invented Christmas.
Sitting on my table right now.
And that is your other really solid. So if you saw, like, let's say you run out and you see Wonder, and then you go, okay, now what else can I see as a really good family film in the next week or two? This is the next one. It's Dan Stevens.
It's got your boy in it.
It's got Dan Stevens, who everyone will either recognize from Downton Abbey.
No.
Not Downton Abbey?
No. No. Yeah, I'm sure maybe he was in Down There. That's not where people recognize him.
And from Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, kind of.
You will recognize his eyes.
I recognize him from Legion. Like, if you're, you know, one of those people who watches Justice League or Thor and, you know, all the backstories, these people are watching Legion. And they know Dan Stevens.
So there's a lot of people who will watch Dan Stevens for one reason or another. And in this one, he plays Charles Dickens. And it's just all about the how Charles Dickens came to create the Christmas story. And Christopher Plummer is Ebenezer Scrooge. And these characters that are from A Christmas Story kind of come to life in Charles Dickens' head and kind of speak to him as he's attempting to create the Christmas Carol. And it's just a really fun, interesting kind of Charles Dickens
biopic. I haven't seen it yet, but Dan Stevens seems way too young and clean-shaven to play Charles Dickens.
He has longer hair in this, and he's scruffed up a bit.
The last time we saw Dickens on film, it was Ralph Fiennes and The Invisible Woman. No, that's Dickens.
This is a very different Dickens. It's a younger Dickens. But again, it's just a good family film to keep in mind if you need another escape to the movies during the holiday season.
It's reminding me of Goodbye, Christopher Robin.
It's so much better than that. So much better. So if you kind of thought, oh, I missed that that Winnie the Pooh movie, this doesn't even compare. This one's so much better, so much lighter, and just more entertaining for the whole family.
All right, quick recap. Justice League on the superhero barometer, it's pretty low.
It's in the middle, just smack in the middle.
I wouldn't know there's too much beneath it. Maybe like Thor
for
the
DC
Dark
Comics.
World,
no, yeah. I would put it in the middle for the DC Comics movie, and generally always below the Marvel movies that I like.
3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri will knock your socks off.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great one. Look for it.
Wonder.
Wonder, great family film. Just worth seeing.
Mudbound is probably the most aptly titled movie I've ever seen. You watch this movie and you didn't know the title and they say, it's Mudbound. You're like, damn right it is.
It is, and it's worth getting mired in.
Very good. The Star.
Oh, if you're skipping Sunday school class, this is the movie you can actually get maybe extra credit for.
Beats Per Minute. Nope, go back and find that documentary called How to Survive a Plague instead.
Missed it, not sorry I did.
Bill Nye, Science Guy. Seriously, This is just for, like, Mrs. Nye.
There is no Mrs. Nye.
Well, that's not for anybody.
It's neither here nor there.
Good Lord, you're on fire. Walking out.
Walking out. Matt Bomer fans, maybe. That's pretty much it, but you're gonna have to seek out Walking Out if you have any interest in seeing it.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening. Make sure to go get your new bottle of Beaujolais Nouveau this week. It's out. It won't be
in
stores
for long. Are they
sending
us money? Are you sponsored?
I'm not
by
kidding.
This?
It's a fun wine. And it's not out all year except for like this one little
right.
slice of November.
You can go ahead, plug your wine.
Get your Beaujolais Nouveau. But so if they want to send me money so I can keep doing it, by all means. Care of the Cinema Clash. All right. Thank you for listening. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl. Happy Thanksgiving.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.